A large part of the campaign will be won or lost on paper. It's the chosen weapon of civilized government. You must keep up a steady barrage of letters and keep all of the replies. The expert cell must extract as much information and as many admissions as possible. But there is another purpose in the barrage. A steady stream of sensible and critical letters that demand careful replies has a powerful softening up effect. Officials will begin to realize that it's going to be a very tough campaign, giving them a lot of extra work and plenty of opportunities for slipping up or getting caught out. The worst sort of letter from your point of view is the one that takes you an hour to compose and is answered in 2 minutes. What you're aiming for is a letter that you can dash off quickly and that keeps the official busy for a long time concocting the answer. His standard response to a letter from the public is to be brief, non-committal, and uninformative. If he can simply reply with, "We'll bear your views in mind," then he's won and you have lost. Make sure your letter contains some suggestion that cannot be left unrefuted on the file. For instance, if they have to admit you know more than they do, their credibility in defense of the plan will be seriously eroded. So you can keep them busy with questions like, "Surely Section 43, Paragraph 6 of the plan conflicts with the principles stated in Mr. Tashimar's famous paper at the Los Angeles Environmental Conference last April." A refinement is to give the wrong reference first time, so when they finally come up with that discovery, you can say, "Oh, no, I meant, of course, Mr. Onishi's paper at Geneva, but surely you must have realized that from the context." Challenge the enemy's inconsistency. "This is not the reason that Councillor Forthright gave at the original meeting in the town hall," or, "This is in conflict with the Ministry Circular 13367. You did not enforce this in 1994 in an identical instance." Do not, of course, state what the circular or the councillor said. Let them sweat. It can also be helpful to your cause to circulate copies of your letters. "Very happy to accept your explanation on the telephone this morning that it was the ministry and not you who had slipped up." Copy to ministry. One of the standard bureaucratic responses is simply not to reply unless prodded, or to delay replying for a long time to gain breathing space, rather like lobbing in lawn tennis. You therefore have to stand at the net and smash, always replying by return, or else force them up to the net by the epistolary equivalent of a drop shot, something that makes them move like lightning in order to save the point. To achieve this, it is important to conduct your correspondence with the top man. Public officials are only too ready to sell their subordinates down the river. Now they cannot, if the reply will be, "I'm surprised the case has only just been brought to your notice, since it was to you I addressed the letter." Always use the top man's actual name. You'll do much better to address the permanent secretary as "Dear Sir Humphrey." If you don't know it, find it out from one of the switchboard operators. And if he's eminent enough, look him up in Who's Who. You may find hidden treasure. He may be a vice chairman of the National Trust. He may list walking as a hobby. He may have a botany degree. You can also prod procrastinating bureaucrats by invoking an authority from a higher level. If you're dealing with a town hall, a letter to the minister responsible for local government simply listing the delays will elicit a neutral reply. The correspondence will nevertheless be sent down to the department, and it's a law of correspondence, as of gravity, that the greater the height from which a letter descends, the greater the force with which it hits the target. Another ploy is to write to Buckingham Palace. There is scarcely a public official in this country over the age of 40 whose mind does not from time to time revolve around the possibility of an appearance in an honours list. And what's more, he knows very little about how the system operates in practice. Will his name be entered in the Royal Black Book if there are 3 complaints about his actions within 12 months? Will a frown darken the royal brow when the name of the deputy chief planning officer for North Wessex crops up over cocktails at Sandringham? It may be wildly unlikely, but then, a couple of lines on the map changing the route of the pylons is a small premium if it will insure him against such an awful possibility. Once you've gathered all the documentary information you can, you must confront the enemy. This confrontation takes place at the mass meeting to which you invite the leading proponent of the plan to answer your questions. If he's shrewd and experienced, it is possible that he will in fact hold this meeting himself. This is not so good for your cause, since it gives him the initiative and the appearance of democratic behavior, and you can't boycott this meeting without damaging your cause. Whichever way it happens, the tactics are much the same. His intention is to commit himself to nothing, to keep the emotional tone low, to talk on the assumption that the plan is already agreed, and to emerge as a sensible, reasonable fellow citizen who's done the best possible job in the circumstances. You must keep the emotional tone high. Have lots of vociferous supporters. Keep strictly to the question, will the plan happen or not? Instead of, how will it work in practice? Use questions systematically, not to elicit information, but to inflict damage. If he evades, shout or chant, answer the question in unison until you get an answer. You must also plan the sequence of questions, since success lies in attacking in turn the answer to each previous question. It should go something like this. So you admit that no one bothered to ask. In other words, you haven't kept up with the latest developments. So in fact, it could be done at half price. A real exposure of incompetence and duplicity will probably provoke an outburst. The meeting should end with a rousing statement of determination to resist, followed by prolonged cheers and perhaps the singing of a song. The audience should go home more than ever convinced of the rightness of their cause, the weaknesses of the enemy case, and the possibility of victory. The enemy representatives should retreat, revolving in their minds the alternative plans, if this one fails to get through. If you've played your cards right so far, your case is now locally famous. Most people in the district have read about it in the local paper. They've seen your placards and posters. Now, you must convince the enemy that you're going on from strength to strength. So your activities must continue on the assumption that the next inevitable stage is the public inquiry. In fact, you don't want a public inquiry if you can possibly win without one, but nor do the enemy. It means enormous work, the preparation of endless documents, fierce scrutiny of all their previous work by men whose judgments may determine their future careers. If they suspect that you can't afford one, or that your movement has run out of steam, they will be encouraged to go on, so don't give them grounds for any suspicion. However, if the diplomatic moves fail, and resolution hardens, you may have to face up to a public inquiry after all. So far, you've been conducting a campaign. From now on, you're engaged in a war. Both sides now start to dig in to support their positions. The war will end with the pitched battle of the inquiry. If it's Sir Humphrey you're fighting, the judge who is hearing the case is in the pay of the other side. You are taking on the civil service, and he is a civil servant. Fortunately, however, Britain has a civil service which is so large and so full of internal rivalries that he may be more kindly disposed than you would guess. The inquiry is fought according to the rules, not by publicity or negotiation or political pressure, and the experts' labours over the past month are the foundation of your war effort. They will have to prove that the plan you are fighting is faulty and inadequate, and that the alternative is better for everyone. You will have to retain a barrister if you want to give yourselves a real chance. And for this, the fundraising cell is your only hope. Up till now, you fueled your campaign with enthusiasm, dedication, invention, and a few hundred pounds collected in small sums. Now, you will have to find a five-figure sum. The irony is that if you put in enough time and effort, skill, and money, you have a very good chance of finding an alternative site, which is in fact an improvement on the original plan. A lot of people agree that the final M4 route, after 6 successful objections, is better than the original. This means that 6 communities have been forced into enormous sacrifices in order to do properly work which the civil servants, also paid by their money, had bungled, and yet they get no redress and recover no costs. That, however, is the rule, and this part of the game has to be played strictly by the rules. You can only watch and pray. You may lose the inquiry. If so, there is little likelihood of a reversal. You may win and get the plan scrapped. Either way, the battle is over. But there is a third possibility. Since the result of an inquiry is not binding on a government, a finding in your favor may be reversed. If this happens, your only hope is to become a national scandal. You must make your town or borough or valley a national byword for the oppression of the ordinary citizen by tyrannical bureaucracy. Your parades must be as ingenious and eye-catching as ever, but they must take place in Whitehall and Parliament Square. You must try and arrange a Sunday theatre evening in the West End. An anthology of poems, songs, speeches about freedom and oppression, and see if someone like Judi Dench or Harold Pinter or Joanna Lumley are free to star in it. Now, for the first time, it becomes possible to personalize. Your verdict cannot have been overruled without the personal consent of a minister. Consequently, you can make him the focus of your campaign. His cartoon can grace your banners. His effigy can start your bonfire on November the 5th. You're not trying to get him to climb down. That's not the way government works. A climb down would be a signal to every discontented group in the country that they will get their own way if they only make a big enough fuss. But a reshuffle is another matter. The average life in office of the minister is about a year, and in some ministries it's only a few months. Your man may soon be moved on, or up, or down, or out, for reasons which have nothing whatsoever to do with your case. His successor must take up office, realizing that your case is a millstone round his neck, and you must now give him a chance to rid himself of it while saving his ministry's face. A new study with wider terms of reference, or any other of the formulae of graceful withdrawal, should be made available, and he should be offered the chance of appearing nationally as a decent chap, a real democrat, the people's champion. And if you fail, you fail. And the final irony is that when the bulldozers move in, and your community is destroyed, the campaign itself will have ensured that it's become a far more healthy, warm, living, unified community than it ever was before the plan was published.